KBOO, volunteer-powered, listener-sponsored community radio in Portland, the Columbia Gorge, and Corvallis.
De chakarja agus falsha do radio sirsha erin tame maya shivan kashlin gelmore na cullen and you're listening to Radio Free Ireland here on KBOO. This is our first show in our new time slot, and for all of you joining us for the first time, falsha, welcome to Radio Free Ireland. And we're going to get right to it today. We're short of time, so we want to make sure we can fit as much as we can into this wee hour. And with any luck at all, I have joining us on the telephone now, Mr. Danny O'Connell. Good morning, Danny. Are you there?
Good morning. Yes, I am.
Oh, great. You're coming through loud and clear. Thank you for joining us today. And Danny O'Connell is the National Immigration Chair of the Ancient Order of Hibernians. Is that right, Danny?
That's correct.
And we've brought you on the program today specifically to talk about the case of Paul Brennan. Now, some of our listeners may not be familiar with this because I am in a new time slot, so hopefully I've got some new ears out there. So real quickly, Danny, could you just give us a little run-through of Paul Brennan's case? He's an Irishman who has been living in the U.S.
Yes.
for over 20 years, and I'll
yes.
let you take it from there.
Paul is married to a U.S. citizen here in, has been married and is married to a woman in California.
Mm-hmm.
He is a former escapee from the Mays prison. And he has been, was one of what was known as the H Block 4 years ago,
mm-hmm.
when we were fighting extradition to Britain. And at that time, they won their case, and the American officials allowed him to stay in the San Francisco area. Now, Paul and his wife were traveling in Texas. And what happens with a lot of these former prisoners who are working, they have work permits, and the immigration has at times a slow replacement of their work permit. They'll make them fill them out sometimes every month, issue it for 1 month. They file a renewal. It always doesn't come on time. So they might have to stop working for a week till that paperwork comes through. Well, the paperwork had not come through for his renewal, and he was traveling in Texas. He was stopped at a border checkpoint and by border officials, and he told them that he was not a U.S. citizen. Once they noticed his work permit was expired, they looked at his record from years ago, and they put him in prison and began the process that has now concluded with his deportation back to Ireland.
So, yes, we had the opportunity to speak to Paul while he was in detention in Texas. And, you know, he talked about the travails that he experienced there, being moved around to different prisons. You know, it was very difficult to keep in touch with his lawyer and his family. He was living in very overcrowded conditions and all that. But throughout the case, he's just been maintaining that he just wants a fair chance to defend himself, which, of course, is very difficult when you're locked up in a detention center thousands of miles away from your supporters and your lawyer. But, you know, we've certainly been aware of the case, and I know a lot of his supporters have written letters in support of his case. And sadly, it looks like all to no avail. Is he actually on his way back now? What can you tell us about that, Don?
As I understand it, yes. But I haven't heard officially.
Right.
But he was given his 48-hour notice.
On Wednesday.
And it was on Wednesday.
Right.
Tuesday or Wednesday. And so what we believed would happen would be that today would be the day that he would be sent back.
Well, it's certainly a sad day for all lovers of freedom and justice. And I guess people here are going to want to know what comes next for Paul and what comes next for his supporters. Is there anything we can do at this point?
Well, there is. I mean, it's been an uphill battle with Paul. We have other people, many other people in the States that are in a similar situation. And these aren't, you know, these aren't what you would consider undocumented Irish. These are people who have come to the United States looking for political asylum because they were fleeing the war and the problems of the war, or had been an escapee such as Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we continue to work for Paul as well as some of the other folks who have been deported. You know, deportation carries a lifelong ban, can carry a lifelong ban from coming back to the United States.
Mm.
When it comes to Paul, our first thing will be working on him being able to come back into the States.
Right.
You know, and as we, and as the AOH, we're avid supporters of the Good Friday Agreement, and we believe that extradition in this fashion or deportation in this fashion serves no purpose with regard to the peace process. And in fact, in a lot of ways, we'll work against it. So as part of that, and under the guidelines of the Good Friday Agreement, we're going to continue to work to say these individuals who have been deported and are looking for political freedom in the United States should be granted the right to come here, live here, and in this case, in Paul's case, obviously, with his American family.
And, you know, it must be noted how many people you know, good standing in the community have come forward to support Paul. And this seems to be a pattern, Danny. You know, it seems like in the last several years, they seem to go after them one at a time. And, you know, we've seen deportation after deportation, and it's a real travesty. And I guess we were hoping for a little better from the new administration.
And I think part of that, and I agree, part of the situation with Paul was the fact that he was picked up under the last administration and was in the system and was pretty far down the line by the time, you know, the new administration came into place. And, yeah, granted, we're 7 months into the new administration, and there's a lot of things going on.
Do you think it's a case of just that they've got their hands full with other stuff, so he's not a high priority for them?
I would say that's part of it. I think that, you know, anytime I'm a former football coach. Anytime we look at a loss, we look at what we could have done different.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure, you know, I look at it from our standpoint on AOH, what we could have done different. And I'm sure Paul looks back at some things and what he may or may not have been able to do different.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at into the details of Paul's cases, I'm sure there's some things that he would like to change, especially once he was here in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, as you mentioned, there are other people still at risk. So we are certainly going to keep our attention on those stories as well. Danny, do you know if people can still send letters of support, perhaps through the website? Will the Paul Brennan support group be keeping their website up for a while now?
I expect that in the next week, or no, I would say in about a month, that we'll start seeing a completely revamped website. I think Paul, you know, needs to get, when he gets back to Ireland, he needs to get, obviously, his feet on the ground, spend some time with his family there, and just step back and, you know, take advantage of being out of prison and being able to think clearly.
Right, well, at least he'll be able to do some work on the case now that he won't be in prison. So we'll definitely keep in touch and try to keep people informed as to what's going on, but it's certainly a sad thing to see that this deportation actually happened.
Right, and we're going to continue to work not just for Paul, but for the other people who have been deported in the past, and most especially continue to work for those who are still here in the same class that Paul's in.
Well, Danny, thank you very much for joining us today, and I hope we can talk again sometime in the future.
Thank you very much.
All right, take care now. And that was Daniel O'Connell, the National Immigration Chair for the Ancient Order of Hibernians, one of the largest Irish-American groups in the country. Talking about the sad case of Paul Brennan, yes, folks, he has been deported, and he is on his way back to the north, ripped from the bosom of his family in the land of the free. Very sad. And right now we're going to take a short wee musical break and come back and talk to an old friend of ours here in Portland. Mr. John Herson will be joining us from Dungannon, County Tyrone. Give us a little bit of an update on his recent trip to Gaza Strip with George Galloway. I'm really looking forward to that. And then after we finish talking to John, do stay tuned in, because we've got a whole lock of Welshmen in the building. There's a Welsh festival going on this weekend, tonight and tomorrow, and it sounds just fascinating. I'm really looking forward to getting these guys in here and ask them a bunch of questions about Wales, which is a country we have sadly given a bit of short shrift to in recent years. So we're going to learn a few things about Welsh culture today. But right now, let's hear a little bit of Irish music. This is from Schult, Spirit of the Music, with Donal Lunny and just a whole slew of other folks. This is the Schult theme with the Schult House Band, featuring John McSherry of Belfast on the Ilian pipes. hot stuff from one of the finest alien papers in Belfast. That was John McSherry and Donald O'Loney from Schult, The Spirit of the Music. And that's available on The Bottom Line Records. Looks like it's a subsidiary of Hummingbird Records. Okay, now we're going to take it across the pond here, and with any luck at all, we're joined now by our old friend, John Harrison. John, what about you?
How are you doing, Maury? Great to hear from you again.
Same as that. It's always good to talk to you, John, but I'm real glad that you could join us today to talk about your recent trip to the Gaza Strip with George Galloway. We've been talking about Mr. Galloway here on Radio Free Ireland for a number of years. He's always up to something good, always stirring the pot. And, you know, I've heard about his trips to Gaza, and I think they're just brilliant. But I had no idea that a friend of Portland had actually gone on one of these trips. So tell us about, start out by telling us when you went and how you got there.
Well, basically, well, the war broke out in Gaza on the 27th of December, and going back to before Christmas, mm-hmm. and I'm sure like everybody else in the world, I was absolutely horrified about the images that were allowed out at the
yes.
time, because as you do know, that all international press were barred from entering Gaza during the onslaught of the war
mm-hmm.
By Israel. So what information was coming out was just absolutely horrific.
Yes, it was.
And especially seeing the amount of innocent children and people that were getting murdered, you know.
Right.
Like, I mean, there was close to the time the war finished up in January 22nd, there was close to 1,500 people were murdered, you know. And that was in a three-week, just in a 22-day war, you know. And I was disgusted.
It was
the next thing then I found out that there was a convoy of aid was going from the UK to Gaza. Led by George Galloway under the banner Viva Palestina. And I just knew right away when I read it that they had to be on it, you know, and do something, because everybody that I knew at home, you know, life was absolutely disgusting.
John,
I got a truck to get
John, you're cutting out a little bit, so if you could go back to the spot that you were in when we first talked to you. Are you moving around? I think you might be on a cell phone.
I'm solid here now. I'm just sitting off the clock here. Okay.
Okay,
so
this
what
is good.
You lost me out there?
No, this is good. Go on ahead now.
Yeah, so I found out about the convoy, and I then organized, got a lorry, and in 6 days, we had it filled three times, if not four times over.
Oh, wow.
With the aid, which is everything from blankets to clothes to building equipment, painting, school books,
wow.
You know, toys for kids, as much medical aid as we could gather up as well.
Right, they pretty much need everything. I mean, they've been under this blockade for quite some time now, so they're really short of everything.
Brief history on Gaza.
Right.
As you mentioned, there's a three-year blockade on it. Gaza is an area it's smaller than County Louth in Ireland, which is the smallest county in Ireland.
Yeah.
It's home to 1.5 million people. The half of which are pretty much under 16. There's been a blockade completely around Gaza, and Gaza is the world's biggest prison cell, so it is. You know, the people
yes.
are not allowed to move in, they're not allowed, there's no movement in or out of the controlled border by Israel on one side, Egypt on the other, and then the Mediterranean Sea. You know, the fishermen go more than, like, say, a half a kilometer out, they get shot. The borders are effectively sealed shut. There is nothing as gets in or gets out, and that includes all the aid that's coming into them. Israel
right.
refused.
That includes the people too. If you need medical treatment that you can't get in Gaza, they won't allow you out to seek medical treatment.
Oh, no, you're not allowed out. It's simple as that.
Yeah.
You're not allowed out. And on top of that, they won't allow treatment in either. For example, like, say, cancer treatment is not allowed in because God forbid that they might use some of it to make a bomb out of it.
So clearly it was...
They have to share a colostomy bag. So the surgeons can't perform any major surgery because, to start with, their electricity is rationed to them. The power can go off at any time while somebody is under the knife.
Oh, boy.
And then people, and as you say, they can't then get out of Gaza to go down to Egypt or across even into Israel to get treatment. They're just not allowed out. So basically, they just left today. It's the worst humanitarian crisis that I know of at the minute in the world at present.
So clearly, George Galloway was able to use his name to be able to get in there. And, you know, because of his pressure, that's why these trips have been allowed to go forward. So, now, I understand part of it was a bicycle thing, or was that a different...
That was a different one. There was four cyclists, a medical students had left Ireland and cycled all the way to Gaza. And, of course, when they got to Gaza, they were got to the border at Gaza.
Uh-huh.
The Egyptian authorities to start with, coming through the other side, they tried to get in through the Israeli side. And then the first thing the Israelis done was they confiscated their backup van and left the four guys on their own on their bicycles. They then cycled around to get to the Rafah border, and then as soon as they got there, the Egyptian authorities took the four of them away and deported or just shipped them off home.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't get in. There was a big U.S. convoy. Galloway organized a U.S. convoy of aid. There were over 200 U.S. citizens with medical aid flew to Egypt. They purchased close to $2 million worth of aid, and once again, that was refused in as well. It's very ironic that American weapons are allowed into Gaza, and American bombs and American bullets, but yet the American medical aid is not allowed in.
It's an outrage, so it is. How long did you spend there? How long were you able to stay?
We headed off from London more then on a Valentine's Day. It was 14th of February. It was send a Valentine to Palestine was the motto.
Sweet.
And we took off down in through France into Spain, crossed into Morocco. From Morocco then we went into Algeria. And when you talk about diplomatic pressure with Galloway, the border between Morocco and Algeria hadn't been opened in 15 years.
Wow.
Even Condoleezza Rice couldn't get it open. She was involved in negotiations. And Galloway got it opened and they allowed us through
that
particular crossing. The first time it was opened in
1584.
From through Algeria, then into Tunisia, and then from Tunisia we crossed into Libya.
Right.
A country that's big in the news this week.
Yes, indeed.
When we hit Libya, then the Gaddafi Foundation put together, then they doubled the size of the convoy. They put another 125 vehicles. We had 125 vehicles and 300 people on ours, and they put another 125 vehicles filled with aid. And then we crossed in right through Libya, over through the Sahara Desert, and then into Egypt, and then we went to a town called Al-Arish, which is about 40 kilometers from the Rafah border.
Wow.
And at that point in Al-Arish, the Egyptian authorities decided that only medical aid only was going to be allowed in, and on the Sunday night, they then proceeded to strip half of our vehicle, two big car parts off us where the Libyans and ourselves were in, and they were taking the blankets, the clothes, children's toys, children's shoes, taking it all out. I mean, I've got the video evidence. It's all documented, recorded.
Wow.
People don't believe it. It's one of them things you couldn't tell anybody. You know, it's just horrible. One of the most horrible sights we've ever seen in our life.
Mm.
That just across the border, a few kilometers away, was starving children, homeless people, and the authorities are refusing to let it in.
And this is the Egyptian authorities, not the Israelis.
Egyptian authorities,
but it must be
under a agreement with the U.S.
Right.
With they receive close to the second biggest country that receives aid from the U.S.
That's right.
Is Israel's first. And they receive close to $3 billion a year in U.S. aid, which, by the way, goes into military aid. It doesn't go into helping the poor people of Egypt at all, you know.
Right.
It's all military aid.
That's something that doesn't get talked about much over here either, because Egypt is supposedly our good, great friend. Certainly...
They're no friend for human rights, that's for sure.
Right, that's right. That's right.
I mean, their own people are an oppressed people. It's a savagely bad government, and it's backed up by the West. And this money is delivered to Egypt on condition that they do what Israel says. So Israel is the tail wagging the dog, as far as Mubarak, the Egyptian Prime Minister, is concerned.
Right.
So then we put up, there was a serious fight and struggle was put up anyway, and we finally got our way. And the following day, on Monday, I think it was the 9th of March, we got the gates open at Rafah. And in we went, and Murat, was an unbelievable scene. It was just, I mean, out of the 300 people, there was absolutely not one person that wasn't crying, you know, coming through the border. The reception that we got, the people, the kindness of them, their dignity, And by God, what did we not see? It was just an earthquake zone. I mean, the place was leveled. Just as far as I could see, you know, and the place, like, it's all in the border region that was all hit, you know. It wasn't downtown at all. It was the border regions, because let's be plain and honest about it. Israel wants the land.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about, it's a land war. It's not about Hamas and rockets or anything else.
Right.
They want to steal more land. And, you know, the place was pulverized. I mean, it was just, I mean, there were images that we couldn't see on TV. I mean, it's just too graphic to show it to people, you know.
Oh, John, and, yeah.
Yeah, horrible. It was literally this area that was completely a floored, a residential area. And 6 weeks before they allowed the homeless people a tent in. You know, like, I mean, you imagine something happens anywhere in the world, aid gets to them right away. There was an earthquake happened in late March, early April, I think it was being in Italy. And, like, aid was in to them guys inside 12, 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Everything they needed, everything they wanted. Yet all the aid and everything that went towards Gaza was not allowed in. And recently the Egyptian authorities dumped 200,000 tons of food aid that had been sent for Gaza. They dumped it in the Sinai Desert.
Oh, John. Oh, it's a desperate situation.
Like, I mean, just roll that over and listen, you know, on your list, like, where you've got starving, homeless people in one area. All these people send aid to them, and authorities would rather dump that aid in the desert than let them have it.
It's desperate.
Even if you're a dog, you wouldn't treat an animal like it.
Yeah, it's really shocking to me how little outcry there's been from the international community. And, you know, I think it's important to remind people of the situation on the ground there. Because, as you said, Israel is the largest recipient of foreign aid this country has. And, you know, every dime that we give them for other uses, that's money that they don't have to spend on it, that they can spend on more bombs. And, you know, there's been questions about white phosphorus being used.
I've seen the white phosphorus in my own two eyes. I've seen it in downtown, in the middle of the city, in the residential areas. There's white phosphorus was still on the ground, and the guys were kicking it off, you know, kicking it, and it was all flaming up.
Oh,
and that causes serious, severe death burns.
Right.
And that's what's happened with kids, and that's one of the major things that's been happening since the onslaught. This white phosphorus is still there, and kids are getting burned and killed by it.
I did not realize that.
Yes. Well, you were talking about facts and figures, and I know at the minute in the U.S., there is a lot of talk, and Barack Obama is getting a lot of pressure over trying to get health care reforms and things like that, right?
Right.
Well, the aid that Israel has received from the U.S. is a total now of $1.2 trillion.
Wow.
That equates to $5,700 per head for every U.S. citizen.
That's a lot of money.
Now, how can a country put the money into bombs and bullets and killing innocent people and yet deny their own people a bit of decent health care?
Well, you nailed it, John. That's the question we're all asking ourselves right now. Now, is Mr. Galloway planning more visits? I bet that he is.
Yes, we did that one there, and by the way, that was the largest convoy of aid since the Second World War.
Wow.
He then organized to say the U.S. delegation went across, and they got treated absolutely, it was a shambles the way they were treated.
Mm.
And just previous to that, in the week or two previous to the U.S. one going in, there was a boat, the Free Gaza Movement went with a boat loaded with aid. And they left out of Cyprus, and in international waters, the Israelis got them, kidnapped them all.
Right.
This is piracy.
Right, we heard about this.
On that boat was your former congresswoman.
Cynthia McKinney. McKinney, yeah, she's a great girl, aye.
And Maria Maguire, who is a Nobel Peace Prize winner.
That's right.
And I mean, they were just two among an international delegation of over 30 people. Really didn't care. Look, the Pope could have been on that boat.
Mm.
He wouldn't have. The treatment that they got was horrendous. They were arrested, spent 10 days in a prison cell in Israel, and then they were deported all back to their own countries.
Oh, boy.
Then on the back of that, then, as the U.S. one went in, there is Mr. Chavez and Venezuela are planning to do a convoy as well. And then come the beginning of December, there's going to be another massive movement of convoy going with the Americans will be coming over, and the UK and from Ireland, and another convoy to go in and to commemorate the first anniversary on the 27th of December. But it's not about what aid we bring in more. I mean, what we bring in is only a sticky plaster. It's highlighting the fact that there is a siege on and that these people are effectively kept in a prison cell.
Right. There's collective
the largest
punishment.
Prison cell in the world.
Right. Well, John...
There's less than 20% of the aid that's needed to keep it going. And this is coming from, you know, the United Nations there, John Ging.
Yeah.
Less than 20% of the aid is getting in. I mean, children are running around malnourished. They were not allowed children's shoes in. So
that's outrageous.
But Israel deems that if they melted down the rubber in the shoes, that they can make a... It goes for bombs. They won't allow in a shampoo or conditioner.
Wow.
Soap's denied in. Pasta is denied in. Chocolate is denied. Children aren't allowed pencils because they fear that they could take all the wood off the pencils and that the lead could be used for some kind of bomb. You know, like, you know, type of
wow.
They suffered over 500 F-16 attacks.
It boggles the mind, so it does.
I was there more. I mean, I could not believe it. Like, I mean, it's just, well, it's horrendous what we witnessed for their own two eyes. They killed every cow and chicken that they had. They took the bulldozers to the agricultural land
right.
and mowed down every tree that they had for growing fruit or growing olives.
Yes.
You know, like, what harm was the cows and chickens doing?
The
greenhouses were all hit as well. So they hit their water treatment plant. So pure water now is a massive problem.
Yeah.
Their sewage treatment plant was hit. So now that sewage is running into the Mediterranean Sea. So they can't fish and they can't even go into the water now. So they can't.
Many, many war crimes, John.
No cement or building materials are allowed in. Have not been allowed in for 3 years. No building materials have been allowed in whatsoever. Serious war crimes. I mean, Israel is a country that has got, I think it's coming on close to 185 UN resolutions against them.
Right.
It's the single worst record of any country in the world, I think, at the minute.
Mm.
I may be found to be corrected, but how can Western governments back up a state that has got so many breaches of human rights, you know? I mean, why was there a war in Iraq? I mean, if you remind me correctly, I think it was to do with trying to bring some democracy or peace to that area.
That was the cover story. That was the cover story, anyway. Well, John, you know, I could talk to you all day about this, but I do have some fellas coming in. I want to make sure I make time. There's a Welsh festival in town this weekend. And that's a new thing for Portland, so we're looking forward to that. But I certainly would hope that perhaps you could join us again next month and we could talk a little bit about things closer to home and what's been going on with the...
We're all on a high at the minute here this weekend in Tyrone anyway, because we're in the All-Ireland semi-final this weekend. We play Cork this Sunday.
Aye, that's right.
And, with a wee bit of luck, fingers crossed, we'll get through there and then we'll play the winners of Kerry and Meath. But I don't know if Kerry would want to play Tyrone again since we beat them last year in the
right.
final. In 2005 we beat them in the final, and 2003 we beat them in the semi-final.
Up Tyrone.
Tony Mack out there making want to hear that again, you know. They have to hear it from a Tyrone man.
Well, I'll let you give a shout-out to the folks here in Portland. If you want to give a holler out to anybody in particular while
there's
we got you.
There's a whole slew. I would hate to leave anybody out.
Okay.
There's the Egans. I know the Egans are coming home for their parents' 50th wedding anniversary now in a couple of weeks' time, so they are. Hopefully I'll catch up with them. They shoot there knocking about as well, and Sean Connolly, and I'm sure there's a few people still knocking about, Biddy's and Bob Soper and Geraldine and Nancy and musicians and everybody on Donovan as well. I pass on regards to himself.
Will do.
And if anybody wants to find out any more about my trip and what I had done, there's a Facebook page and group set up, and it's called Tyrone to Gaza.
Oh, very
good.
Can
go on to that. There's all the photos are on it, my video, there's little video links on it, so there is, and they can see everything for themselves and read my blog and reports that I wrote while going there and there as well.
Very good. All right, John, so perhaps we'll catch up with you next month then.
Absolute pleasure, Mark. Great to talk to you all again, and say a big hello to everybody there that knows me.
Will do. Thanks a lot, John. Take
all
care
right,
now.
Bye-bye.
So, and that was our old mate, John Harrison, calling from Dungannon County, Tyrone, to talk about his amazing experiences going to Gaza with George Galloway. And again, you can find more info and photos and a blog at Tyrone to Gaza, I believe is the name of the Facebook page. So we're going to take another wee musical break here, and then we're going to come back and talk to a whole bunch of Welshmen who are putting on a festival this weekend. You're listening to Radio Free Ireland here on KBOO. I'm Maura Cullen, and here's a little bit more Alton for you. This is what we started the program with, was The Road to Durham from their CD Horse with a Heart. And this one looks like, let's play Welcome Home, Grania. Of Alton from an old CD of theirs. Let's see, that came out in 1989, if you can believe it, and that was from Horse with a Heart. And now we are going to switch gears tremendously, and I'm very pleased to have joining me in the studio this morning a bunch of fellas who are putting together, and I know I'm going to pronounce this wrong, and Eisteddfod. And first I'd like to introduce everyone to Kerry Shaw of AmeriCymru.
AmeriCymru.
We knew we were going to have these problems.
Okay.
My name's Kerry, and I'm one of the organisers of the Left Coast Eisteddfod, which is going on here in Portland both today and tomorrow. And we hope to see you all there. I want to introduce a number of people who I have with me who are a damn sight more interesting than I am, and who you'll be hearing from shortly. So I'll go around the room from right to left. I have Mr. John Good of Oceans Apart.
That's right. Good to be. How are you?
There you go. A Celtic duo from Arizona. I have Mr. Niall Griffiths, who I know will not be embarrassed if I introduce him as the greatest Anglo-Welsh writer currently practicing and living.
Although I would say best global writer living, to be honest with you.
Okay, sorry. So I undersold him somewhat
and,
there.
But and most
somewhat.
Modest.
And the most modest, yes, absolutely. The author of classics such as Sheepshagger, Kelly and Victor, Runt, Stump, and others. And I'm sure that Moira will be asking questions about those in a little while. Then I have Mr. Geoff Matz of Portland's very own Western Aerial.
Hoyo!
Excellent, excellent. The first correct Welsh pronunciation of the show so far. And, that's a bit of an... But anyway, you know, it's a damn good girl. And he's going to be playing tonight, Friday night, along with Jesus Presley and Runaway Norm and the Slim Jims. And then to his left in the room we have Mr. Chris Kyle, author of Liminal, a brilliant novel which I recommend that you all come along and buy. He will actually sign copies for you for a modest fee. And he's also going to be speaking along with Niall at our writer's salon on Saturday. Then I have Mr. Bruce Anderson, one of Wales' top three tenors, I would say, to be ranked alongside of Bryn Terfel and Catherine Jenkins. And he is going to be performing on Saturday night, and he will be performing together with Mr. Chris Needs, BBC Radio Wales' very own Mr. Chris Needs. They will be performing with Tyler Stenson and with Oceans Apart, and I know that Moira has many questions to ask of these people, and I'm sure that you want to hear more from them and not from me, so I'm going to shut up now, and I'm going to let her get on with it. But just before I close, please come along and see what we've got to offer. We have two excellent shows for you, and throughout the day at the Crystal Ballroom we also have the Welsh Celtic Market, and we have various presentations going on down in Lola's room, where you can obviously get to meet Niall Griffiths, Chris Kyle, and much more. Okay, that's me done.
All right, thanks Kerry, thanks very much, and thanks all you fellas for making the trip down here to talk to Radio Free Ireland. I guess I'll throw the first question open to the floor, and that would be how do you feel that you are received as Welsh writers in the larger world of writing? Do you find that that writing about Welsh subjects is something that is becoming more popular, people are having more of an interest in, or have you found that you've had to break through like a lot of stereotypes about Wales in order to be able to get published?
Well, that's no question for us, that's for the writers there. So.
Well, I suppose you have to make a distinction between Welsh writer and Anglo-Welsh writer. You know, in that I don't write in Welsh, I don't write in Cymraeg. And I was born in England, I was born in Liverpool. I mean, the term doesn't offend me in any way, you know. I've actually got no problem with that. In terms of did you have to break through, I thought what you had to break through, to be honest with you, was a certain conservatism that runs throughout Welsh, certainly Welsh literary culture, you know. The subject matter that I use and the language that I use, it was seen as somehow offensive to the great tradition of Iolo Goch and Dafydd Gwilym. I disagree entirely. I think it's very much in that Maverick, that Maverick tradition, you know. But it seems to be, I feel that I'm part of the other kind of recent flowering of Welsh writing, you know. We had the industrial novel of the 30s that kind of died down. But recently, you have, especially in the small Samizdat press, well, I hate to use the word Samizdat because all the risking is not being read, they're not risking being shot in Stalinist Russia. But anyway, these kind of small underground presses are really blooming in Wales. And there's quite a few Welsh publishing companies now, and it is getting some kind of worldwide recognition, and it's not before time, I don't think.
Well, that's good to hear, and you know, I find that most living cultures that are still ongoing and evolving, you do get people that are upset about the changes and, you know, the give and take from other cultures and perhaps even the basic shock value of some of your work. People have a tendency to try to keep, their best face forward. For instance, when, who is the fella? McCourt, that wrote Angela's Ashes. And he just got a load of trouble for writing about Ireland in, you know, unpleasant terms and exposing the gritty underneath of the culture. And, you know, I know he caught a lot of flack at home for it.
Yes.
So I'm wondering if that's been your experiences as well.
There's an issue, I think, with the reception of Welsh writing in English in England, as opposed to in Wales. That I think there has been a problem of how Welsh writing in English is received in England. There's just been a long historic problem of patronage and maybe even hostility. But I think that is changing, and I think also that Welsh identity is becoming much more self-confident, whether in Welsh or in English. So I think, yeah, I think there is a little bit of a renaissance going on.
Aye, that's good to hear. And you guys are right at the forefront of it. Now, we haven't talked a lot about Wales on this programme, and that's my fault, and that's why I'm glad to have you here. Perhaps we'll ask Bruce how you would perceive Welsh culture. How, if someone was to ask you, what's, you know, Wales, I thought that was just a county in England somewhere. You know, I don't know if you get that kind of offensive questioning, but or perhaps
it's most probably because we haven't got a Welsh bar on every corner of every city, like the Irish, really.
But indeed, the Welsh have been in the forefront of keeping their culture alive, like, for instance, the language.
Exactly,
I know that
yeah.
You folks have been much more successful at getting the language up and living again.
Well, as a non-Welsh speaker on the new album, I've done a little bit of Welsh, which I was very, very nervous about, because back home you like to speak your own dialect and your own language perfectly.
Right.
But it's a complex language to speak if you haven't been brought up with it. To learn the language is quite difficult. Mm-hmm. Chris is a Welsh speaker. And
I'm a Welsh speaker, and I've done all American songs in English on mine, by the way.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, being, you know, there's a joke back home, so if you do a show in England, he goes, I'm from a small village just outside of Bristol called Wales. Yeah, but it's naive more than anything.
Right.
But we are very proud of our nation, and it is a separate entity.
It is a separate entity. Let us reinforce that one.
It's not just. What's the quote we've heard every single time we mention Wales? An endangered species. No, no, we're not.
No, certainly not. Judging from the crowd.
We're breeding very well
today.
I got a 4-year-old son, so there we go.
Well, now, and I did want to talk to Chris as well.
Hello.
And
my best BBC voice.
Well, I know that you're slightly infamous back home, and
sort of.
And if I could ask you straight out, how you think the gay culture is being received in Wales, given its maybe great love of its own traditions? Have you found a lot of support, or do you get backlash from your listeners? Or
No. I mean, years ago, being brought up in a small Welsh village, being gay, was totally impossible.
I can imagine.
It was horrendous. Even teachers making me write 100 lines, I am a Nancy boy, I must change. It was awful. Unbelievably so bad. And now it seems that you can't do anything unless, or, you know, people have phoned up and said, how should I spend? And I'm going, what? You know? Or, I've got a nephew, same denomination as you, darling, you know? And it is so respected now. I think Welsh is quite big at the moment, it's trendy, and I think being gay, I've never been so accepted in my life,
well,
to be honest with you.
Well, that's great.
I used to hide it and say, it's okay, it's just my friend, or, you know, but no, I don't say anything except who I am and what I am.
That's wonderful.
You know?
And I dare say that you being a presenter on the BBC has really helped a lot of young Welsh people be able to be more accepting of their own.
Older people are incredibly accepting me and my partner. I've been, the BBC, which you would think would be very stiff upper lip, has really changed. You know, they're very proud of what I do, and the barriers have broken down. You know, young people, and I try to be a great mentor of young, new people who are unsigned, and to get airtime. And it's also good for my listening figures, because say I'm going to play Billy, he's going to tell all his family and friends and everybody.
Sure.
So I'm going to get more listeners.
Right.
So I'm not daft.
That's great, though.
It's totally accepted. You get the idiot now and again, you know, blows you a kiss, and I just say, well, you're safe as houses. It's only men I'm after, you know, so, you know. No, it's fine. No problems at all.
Well, that's great. That's great to hear. Now, let's see. I guess we're running out of time already. We got about 8 minutes left, and I want to make sure I talk a little bit more about this weekend's events so everybody's clear as to what's going on. We have a couple of pairs of tickets to give away, a pair for this evening and a pair for tomorrow. If you're interested in coming out, give us a call here at 231-8032 and leave your name at the front desk and you'll be able to come to the Eisteddfod.
Yes!
All right, I'm working on it, lads. Now, so tell me a little bit more, Kerry, about what you're going to be doing this weekend.
Yeah, well, there are a number of presentations and movie showings as well downstairs in Lola's room at the Crystal. And if you go to shameless plug for my site now, yeah. If you go to americumri.ning.com.
Now spell that for us.
I think I probably should.
Okay.
AmericyMru. So that's America without the A, and then just stick a YMRU on the end of it. So it's AmeriCymru, Cymru being CYMRU. And that's .ning.com. It's a Ning site, so it's a social networking site. And it appeals to anybody here who is even remotely of Welsh extract, or if you perhaps had an uncle who once spent a weekend in Llandudno or something like that, to join. You're qualified. If you're a Tom Jones fan, you're certainly qualified. Or if you're just a Cymrophile for whatever reason, then join up. We'll welcome you all with open arms. We extend a special welcome to our Celtic cousins, both Scots and Irish. And in that context, I should just mention that Mr. Edward Channon has just come into the room to drop off a copy of his book, The Ballad of a Bagpiper.
Uh-oh.
He will be performing during the festival. And the book itself is a series of humorous incidents. I shouldn't really do a spoiler, but there is certainly one in here where he actually fell into an open graveyard, which was full of water at the time, because he wasn't looking where he was going. Basically. Well, actually, he was piping, and nobody told him to stop, so he didn't. Well, he did, but, you know, not in the way that he planned to. Very embarrassing. But he has also played at nudist weddings and other slightly less kind of traditional Celtic gatherings.
Slightly less traditional. It sounds like this whole affair is going to be slightly less traditional.
Oh, it's going to be less than traditional. Yeah. There will be no late-night candlelit knitting sessions, and it's not going to be tea and Welsh cakes either.
Nor will there be full-frontal nudity, I think.
But there won't be full-frontal. Well, I don't know. Maybe later on in the evening. It depends really how much people drink.
No guarantees on that.
No guarantees on that either. But the main thing is we have two excellent shows. As I say, we have Jesus Presley, so we have Jesus is on our side, or rather the Reverend Tony Hughes, he will be playing. We have the excellent Western Ariel, and Mr. Geoff Matt is going to be playing, man who pronounced Hoyle correctly earlier on in the show, so he has done his research, and he will also be playing a Tom Jones number, She's a Lady, and that we're looking forward to.
We're
also hoping that Mr. Edward Channon will in fact accompany the band onto the stage with the pipe and so forth. Also, the Slim Jims, another excellent band, will be playing Runaway Norm. And then Saturday, of course, the Pièce de Résistance, as it were, Mr. Chris Needs, BBC Radio Wales' very own Mr. Chris Needs, and Bruce Anderson, Oceans Apart, and Portland's very own.
I thought you were going to shock me and say MBE then.
MBE, yes.
You don't know
sorry.
Who's ever
sorry.
Said that in 4 years.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, I've just been reminded that Chris Needs does have an MBE.
No, but I wanted a dame, but never mind.
Okay, that one. So that's a member of the British Empire, isn't it? It's a gong.
I still prefer a dame.
Okay.
We won't hold it against.
No. And discuss. Okay, so we got another MBE. We're crawling with MBEs.
Oh my God!
And so, that's just wonderful.
This is a first for Radio Free Ireland. Let me tell you.
Okay. Well, we do apologise for it. You know.
Not at all.
But anyway. Those are some of the things
going
on.
Tonight it starts out at what time?
The show. It's ongoing now. And the Welsh Celtic Market and the other presentations will be running between 9 and 5, both days. The shows start at 7. Tonight is Western Aerial, Jesus Presley, the Slim Jims, Runaway Norm. And we have a pair of tickets to give away for that.
Right.
Total value, a massive $40.
Hey, and then we appreciate it.
You're very welcome. And we have a pair of tickets to give away for Chris Needs and Bruce Anderson, Oceans Apart and Talis Senses tomorrow night. That is half seated. So get there early. That's a whopping $44 worth of tickets right there.
All
so
right.
We've got giveaway tickets for both of those. The other thing I must point out, have I got time?
All
just
right.
1 minute.
You do.
Okay. The other thing I must point out is that the mayor, Portland's very own Sam Adams, will be attending the event tomorrow at 4 o'clock. He'll be speaking along with myself, regrettably, and Mr. Chris Needs, fortunately. So, you know, that's 2 out of 3, which ain't bad. And they will be talking about the forthcoming AmeriCymru International Film Festival, which we plan to hold in Portland next year.
Yes, I'm glad you brought that up. I wanted to let people know about that, because that sounds like it's going to be great as well.
It will be. We hope to book up the entire McMenamin's chain for that, because we'll need a lot of venues. We plan to show around about 200 movies.
Wow, fabulous.
Many of them have already been submitted. Submissions are coming in for that now.
Yeah.
And that will go on for a week, and we will have the Left Coast Ice Deadwood next year at the end of that week. So it'll be the biggest American Welsh event in history, if we leave aside the Smithsonian bash earlier on this year, but that doesn't count. That was publicly funded, so you know. So there you go. I think that's around about all that I wanted to say.
All right. Well, if anyone else has something that they want to get out, feel free. I'm sorry we didn't have more time today, but I'm very pleased that we had this opportunity to talk to you and let people here in Portland know that they have a great opportunity to go and experience modern Welsh culture firsthand. And Kerry, how did you, are you one of the founders of this whole idea of the Eisteddfod here in the States, or? How did you get involved in this whole organizing thing?
My girlfriend and I, Gabrielle Beckett, who's the co-organizer of the event, suggested this around about a year ago when we were on a camping trip to John Day, and I thought that she was barking mad, actually. You know, really.
So you're blaming it all on her, then?
Yes. Okay. So if this is a big flop, it's her fault. But it won't be. It'll be a howling success. And actually, I warmed to the idea. It just seemed to me like a ridiculously difficult challenge to pull it off. And so I thought, well, we'll have to do it then, you know. And we more or less have.
It's been a pleasure getting to know you guys, and thank you very much for doing this here in Portland. It's wonderful to have so much talent out here. People can come around and pick your brains tonight and tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we'll do it all again next year.
Yep, hopefully.
All right. Thanks again. And I think we're going to go out. Maybe we'll have time for both tracks, but I at least want to get to the track off of Bruce's CD, Sorrento.
Yep.
And this track, World in Union, Cymru.
/Cymru, yeah. World in Union, Cymru.
Cymru. Shame on me. I won't make that mistake again.
Cool.
And this has Welsh lyrics in it.
Yeah, my first attempt at Welsh. I can thank Chris for the help with the translation.
Can you tell us what the song's about, basically?
So the chorus itself is all about, you know, being away from home, missing your homeland and how proud you are. There's only a small nation, but like the little terrier, we hold our own.
That's right. It's a fierce wee country.
Yeah, it is.
And I want to thank you for bringing the CD, Sorrento, by Bruce Anderson. Chris Needs also brought us a CD, Love Is All. And if we don't have time to get to it today, I will definitely be playing it on the next
show. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you all. And good luck tonight and tomorrow.
Cheers. Everybody come down.
Okay, I'm going to finish off now, and we'll put on Bruce Anderson. This is World in Union /Cymru.
Hey.
All right. And I'm Maura Cullen. It's been great doing Radio Free Ireland for you, and I'll see you on the third Friday of next month. Slán. We got operator error here. Hang on just a second and we'll get her up. See if we can't get this going. We seem to be having a problem. We're going to go to Chris Needs then, and we'll play a track. We'll play a track from Love Is All, and this one's called All the Way.
It's a duet with the girl. It's the girl that starts, not me.
Okay.
My voice isn't that high.
All right, thanks. Here we go.
When somebody loves you, it's no good unless they love you all the way. Happy to be near you when you need someone to cheer you all the way.
Than the tallest tree is, that's how it's got to feel. Deeper than the deep blue sea, that's how deep it goes, if it's real.
When somebody
needs
you, it's no good unless she needs you.
The KBOO Community Calendar for Friday, August 21st. Join the World Affairs Council of Oregon for Music and Movie Under the Stars tonight. Music starts at 6:30, the film begins at dusk, and will be held at Washington Park Amphitheater. Washington Park is located at 600 Southwest Kingston Avenue in Portland. The featured film tonight will be Vicky Cristina Barcelona, a film directed by Woody Allen. As you wait for night to fall, you can put on your dancing shoes. For La Guardia Civil, bring a picnic dinner and a friend to this free event. More information at worldoregon.com. Support two great nonprofits, Northwest Veg and Vegan Outreach, at a yard sale and bake sale to benefit these groups. This event will be held Saturday, August 22nd from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the 4000 block of Northeast 19th Avenue in Portland. More information at northwestveg.org or veganoutreach.org. The Asian and Pacific Islander Community Improvement Association will be holding its 10th annual home buying fair this Saturday, August 22nd from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Portland Community College Southeast Center, located at 2305 Southeast 82nd and Division in Portland. A multilingual home ownership workshop with free admission. More information at 503-799-8421. Volunteers of America Home Free Restraining Order Program is a civil legal advocacy program that offers in-person advocacy and support to people seeking protective orders at the Multnomah County Courthouse. Volunteers are needed. Training will be taking place in September. The program primarily serves clients who have not accessed existing domestic and sexual violence resources, such as crisis lines or shelters, and who have recently experienced an assault or abusive incident. Advocates in this program are a critical source of information, safety planning, and support for survivors. More information, call Jolene at 503-802-0494, 503-802-0494. For details about these events, visit us at kbu.fm/community calendar. I'm Alicia Olson for KBOO, volunteer-powered, listener-sponsored community radio in Portland, the Columbia Gorge, and Corvallis.
This news brief brought to you by the International News Net.
The Obama administration has commitments from a dozen countries willing to accept detainees from Guantanamo. Britain, France, Ireland, Italy, Portugal, and Spain have already agreed to take detainees. 9 EU countries have privately told the Obama administration they'll resettle detainees or are considering taking some. Starting this year, Americans will have to get approval from the Transportation Security Administration to travel by air. Permission is by no means assured. If your name matches a no-fly list, even mistakenly, you'll be denied the right to reserve a seat. The US and Switzerland have signed a deal whereby UBS will give the IRS details of 4,400 clients suspected of holding undeclared assets in return for the US abandoning a lawsuit seeking to identify all its 52,000 US account holders.
This news brief brought to you by the International News Net.
Former Bush administration Homeland Security Secretary Tom Ridge says he considered resigning because he was urged to issue a politically motivated security alert on the eve of George Bush's re-election. In a book to be released September 1st titled The Test of Our Times, America Under Siege, Ridge reveals he was blindsided by the FBI because the agency withheld critical information from him and found his urgings to block Michael Brown from being named head of FEMA ignored. FEMA was accused of gross incompetence in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. Ridge was also pushed to raise the security alert on the eve of Bush's re-election. Ridge says playing politics with terror was a relatively frequent occurrence in the Bush administration. In August 2004, the AP reported that even some senior Republicans privately questioned Ridge's timing of a terror alert that came just 3 days after the Democratic National Convention. According to the website yournabe.com, Martin Kasdan, director of the Metropolitan Funeral Directors Association, told a gathering of funeral home representatives last week they needed to be prepared to accommodate up to 85,000 swine flu deaths. Kasdan said, when swine flu comes back, it could possibly be devastating. Swine flu, otherwise known as H1N1, first hit the city in May. As of July, more than 47 New Yorkers have died. The Centers for Disease Control has predicted a 2.1 to 3.3% death rate among those who come down with swine flu this fall, which translates into an extra 52 to 86,000 deaths in New York City over a three-month period.
For more news and exclusive interviews, see the complete International News Net World Report each weekday evening on Free Speech TV, 9415 Dish Network, or visit our website, inmworldreport.net.
Stay tuned every evening at 5 for the KBOO News, produced by volunteer news teams right here in our Portland studios.